most of the time when we read a certain parsha at a certain time of the year, and you know, you hear rabbis will say Divrei Torah about, we read this parsha at this time of the year and it fits nicely. Most of the time it's not really a halacha that parsha has to be read at that time of the year. In the days of Chazal, certainly, they did not read all the parshas that we read at exactly the time of the year that we read them. They were on a, what is it, what do they call it? Not triannual, that would be three times a year, but whatever it was. Every 3 years they would finish the Torah. Yet there are certain parshios that we read specifically when we read them, because there's a halacha that it has to be read when it is read. And one such parsha is Parshas Kisavo. Dafka has to be read for Rosh Hashanah, which means even if we weren't up to it, even if we were on a 3-year cycle and we weren't up to Parshas Kisavo, it would be a special maftir for this week. We would dafka read the Tochacha before Rosh Hashanah. Why? Because the Mishnah tells us that it's imperative to read Kisavo before Rosh Hashanah. Tichle Shana v'killoseha. Let the year and all of the curses of the year finish, let it be over. And that's a reference, of course, to the sixth aliyah of this week's parsha, which includes the entire Tochacha. So we want all the curses out of the way, and next year we'll be able to start on fresh footing. So if you actually look at the curses, though, you actually look at what it says, there are a few things that are striking, that just sort of jump out at you a little bit. First one is that most of the curses directly list a bad behavior and doesn't really give much detail about the context of that behavior. When you're doing it, where you're doing it, it's just, these are things that ought not be done, these are things for which one would be cursed, these are terrible things to do. Yet, there are two on the list that specifically say that one is cursed for doing these things privately. One is cursed for doing these things quietly. What are the two? Arur ha'ish asher yasa pesel masecha tu'avas Hashem masi idecharash v'sam b'seiser. It's avodah zara committed privately. Arur makarei ehu b'seiser. Someone who hits somebody else privately. Why is it that of all of the curses that we have, these two, avodah zara and striking another person, these two are the ones that one is specifically cursed if you do it privately? That is question number one. Second question. The very existence of a list of arus is somewhat strange. Meaning, there are 365 los haseis in the Torah. So how much better can you get than that? If it's a los haseis in the Torah, you don't do it. I need to be told that I'm cursed. You know, it reminds me of what people say, that if the Mishnah Berurah would have had a yesh machmirim, not to steal, then maybe people wouldn't steal in business. But it's because it's only in the Ten Commandments, right? You know, it's only in Mishnah Daraisa, so people don't listen to it. But if sometimes we need to hear that it's the Mekubalim say you don't do this or whatever. Something is in Mishnah Daraisa. We need to hear there's an aror, that there's a curse against it. These things are all terribly forbidden things straight from the Torah. Why do I need an arur about each of these things? The whole notion of an arur is a little bit strange. The declaration of Nasa v'Nishma should have been enough. So what was the arur? It was like declaring again. We go into Eretz Yisrael, Hagrizim Hareval, and we declare again, oh yeah, Amen. We accept that curse, we accept that curse, we accept that we're not going to do these things. We already accepted we're not going to do these things. Nasa v'Nishma. We accepted that we're not going to violate any of these dinim in the Torah. So that is question number two. Question number three. It's been noted that when you compare the first set of klalos in Parshas B'chukosai to the set of klalos in Parshas Kisavo, there are some differences. So Sachs loves to talk about the difference between one of them being B'lashon Yachid and the other B'lashon Rabim, and based on the Gra, what that means. Ayin Sham, I'm sure if you haven't yet heard a shir from Rav Sachs about that topic, you will at some point. That's a great topic, really, really wonderful topic. But there's something else about it, and that is that the list of orders in Parshas Kisavo is twice the size. Not like almost twice the size, about twice the size. It is exactly twice the size of the list of arus in Parshas B'chukosai. In Parshas B'chukosai, we have 49 curses in the Tochacha. In Parshas Kisavo, it is 98 curses in the Tochacha. 49 times 2 is 98. What is the message of that? Why is the list not just so much larger, but exactly twice the size? So again, three questions. Why are there two items on the list of the arus that are specifically B'seiser, that we're not allowed to do B'seiser? That's question number one. Question number two was, why do I even need a whole Hargrizim Harevel experience? I already had a Har Sinai experience. Nasa v'Nishma. And question number three, why in Parshas Tisavo is it twice the size of what we have in Parshas Bechukosai? There is an unbelievable perspective offered by the Rashbam. What I mean by an unbelievable perspective is, most of the time, when you look at an anomaly, you know, you see that everything fits except for this one thing. So what do? To try to answer why that one thing doesn't fit? You look at the outlier. You look at that one thing and you try to explain why is this different than everything else. What the Rashbam does is the exact opposite. He looks at all these errors, all these curses, and he says, there are two of them that are besesa. Instead of looking at those two, he says, well, what do the rest of them have in common? That there's no error besesa, it's just an error in general. And what the Rashbam does is unbelievable. He says, let's look at the list. Cursing parents, moving property fences over, what we call a sagas gavul, forbidden relations, perverting justice, taking bribes. He says, what's the common theme of all those things? And Rashbam points out that all of them except for two are always done secretly. You can't take a bribe publicly. That's when you're caught. You get caught publicly. But you can't take a bribe publicly. The whole thing will blow up in your face. You can't move fences over and steal the property. The whole point is you go out in the middle of the night when no one's looking and you move the property line over, not you, someone who would do this terrible isser, moves the property line over a little bit, and he said, all of these things are always done in private. The only two that are sometimes done privately and sometimes done publicly are Avodah Zarah and Makarei Ehu. Those are the only two on the list. And those are the ones that the Torah says, the Torah emphasizes that even by these averos, the curse is directed at people who do them besesa. It's an unbelievable ha'ara of the Rashbam. That the entire list of ours in Parshas Kisavo is all about doing averos secretly. The Torah just had to mention it by two of them because by two of them it wasn't obvious. By all the other 96, it was obvious that you're doing these things privately. No one is megala arayos publicly. You do these things privately. So according to Rashbam, it's an unbelievable thing that happened over here. And the Rashbam is completely based in Divrei Chazal. In fact, a Gemara we just learned recently in the Daf Yomi, for those who do Daf Yomi, according to Rashbam, there was a major change in the way we relate to other people's averos when we came to Harbizim and Arevo. And that according to everybody, that's true according to everybody. The concept of Arvos, the concept of responsibility for other Jews, changed when we got to Harbizim and Arevo and intensified. The question is exactly how it intensified. So the Rashbam understands that prior to our Grizim Mahar Evel, we had the approach of Hanistaros LaShem Elokeinu VaNiglos Lanu LeVaneinu Adolam, that hidden actions are for God alone, and what you do in the privacy of your own home that no one else sees is between you and God, and your neighbor's not responsible for your averos that you do privately, and you're not responsible for his averos that he does privately. But things that are done publicly, and that the community allows to go on and to continue, even though it's in the public eye, that we're all responsible for. That was prior to Har Grizim Har Evel. But now we accept these arurs, and every single one of them is about seisa. It's about something that's done in secret. And we say, yeah, we're accepting, we're now responsible for every avera, even those that are done secretly. And that is not, the Rashbam didn't make this up, that's the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda in Sanhedrin Daf Mem Gimel. Nothing about public sins changed at Har Grizim Har Evel. Everything changed in the realm of private sins, that we all bear that responsibility. And Kli Yakar explains, that's why the numbers are doubled. He says, you know, it's not a coincidence that it was 49,098. He says, because everything that there was an error for has now been a double error, both if it's done publicly and if it's done privately. Meaning everything that you would have been responsible for your neighbors, for the sense of arvus, the sense of responsibility you have to have for other people, that's all still true, but now it's been doubled because now you have to worry about it besesa as well. But if you learn Sanhedrin Daf Mem Gimel, you'll see that there's another shita in Tanaim. There's a shita of Rabbi Nechemia. And Rabbi Nechemia says, it's not fair. My neighbor has a problem with, you know, his temper with his family. And my neighbor doesn't, I don't think. I don't know. But I assume that. My neighbors are wonderful people. But if my neighbor has a problem with, you know, the way he treats his wife in private and in public, they seem like the most perfect family and everything seems wonderful. Why is that my problem? How am I supposed to know about that?
Rabbi Nechemi says, my friend has a problem with the way he uses the internet, and when no one is looking, what is it my problem?
How could that be that I have a sense of arvus for something that I have no sheichus to? I was just talking to a marriage counselor yesterday who was telling me that there's a huge problem in the Jewish community in the way marriages are working, the way married or not working. And he said, we have to do something about this. It's like, how could you not have done something about this already? Every shul should have like workshops constantly on making a better marriage all the time. How could you not have done something? How could I not have done something? I don't know that there's such a huge problem. I haven't seen like this huge problem. I know there's always some people that have issues. He's like, no, you have no idea. He told me like a couple came in and the husband had a bag of his fancy suits, like his Armani suits, that the wife got angry at him. She took scissors and she cut them all up into little pieces. The end of that. So that was healthy marriage, right? So, but how am I supposed to know about these things? Rabbi Nechemi says, not fair. Not fair that I'm going to be responsible for such things. So what's Taka the answer? How's Rabbi Yehuda going to answer that? Why is it fair? So the answer might be that an Avera doesn't happen in a total vacuum. If someone committed financial indiscretions, let's say, someone did something not right financially. So it's true that I may be scrupulously honest, and I never did anything dishonest. But did I perhaps help contribute to a culture where we have this very unhealthy relationship with Gashmias that creates impossible standards that everyone's trying to live up to? Which in turn creates a certain pressure on people who aren't making it to try to make it at any cost. Now, am I responsible for his stealing? I'm not responsible for his stealing. But in a small way, when the culture allows for certain things to take effect, and we're part of that culture, we, in a small way, we're also responsible. In America in 2017, certainly in this part of the world, we have a very unhealthy relationship with Gashmias. I don't know if I mentioned it to you. I pointed out in a number of places recently. When we were reading recently in the Parashios about how the great miracles that happened in the Midbar, that our clothing grew with us and never got worn out, and that the man could taste like everything, anything you would ever want it to taste like. In all of Jewish history, you see those miracles, you read about those miracles, and you're like, that is amazing. How awesome would that be? If you had a magic, but I remember as a child hearing about that for the first time. You remember hearing about that? The mun? It tastes like anything? You know, like whatever your favorite food is. Like, I can have unlimited hot dogs and chicken nuggets and, like, die. But, you know, it tastes like anything. Anything you would want it to taste like. And in the year 2017 in America, you could imagine someone being taught this as a child, and the child raising his hand and asking the kasha, why is that good? If it tastes like anything that you want to taste like, it means that it has to taste like something you've already tasted. Well, then it's not going to excite your palate. Right? You only want to go to a restaurant that excites your palate. Or like, why is it good that my clothing grows with me for 40 years? Did you see how they dressed in 1977? I don't want to dress like that. I want to be stylish. Like, our relationship with Gashmias is such that, you know, when Chazal dreamt up the most unbelievable levels of Gashmias, we look at that and say, you know, we want some more. It's not enough for us. It's a very unhealthy relationship that we have. That culture that we've created makes us all partially responsible when things like that happen. That's on a certain level. And on another level, even more pointedly, if I go to the same shul or the same yeshiva and live in the same neighborhood as somebody who's so slipping in his ruchnius that he's doing things that are terrible, the arvus created at the Hargrizim and Arevel says that I'm responsible for not noticing. They're not noticing that something is wrong, that something is off. You know, there are some people that are just like very attuned to other people's feelings. That I remember I had a neighbor a block and a half away from me, Rabbi Morty Slam. He and his wife are both, he passed away already, she's Baruch Hashem still alive. They both are incredible at just picking up on nuance. I remember he called me to ask me a shayla once or to discuss something with me, and I hung up the phone. 2 minutes later, he calls back. Something didn't sound right in your voice. What's bothering you? I just heard someone we're close to in the shul had a close family member who was diagnosed with something. I didn't say anything to him. I didn't mention, something's not right in your voice. His wife does that all the time. She picks up on these things, like, unbelievable. The idea of having responsibility may be partially because of we're responsible for the culture that we help create, but also because of the sensitivity we're supposed to have to how other people are doing. And if someone is slipping a little bit in Ruchnias, it's for us to notice. You know, if you went to the same yeshiva as a guy in Eretz Yisrael, and you come back and you're in the pressures of college and of life in America and of all the old friends and whatever and all the things that are coming up, and you see that the guy's not making it anymore, he's not hacking it. You know, we have to notice that in order to be able to go over to him and try to be mechazik and try to come up with something. We have to notice that. We also have to try to create a culture where there's a yearning for more ruchnis, where there's a yearning to do more, where there's an expectation that people are on time to davening and learn during Seder, are constantly learning during Seder, not battling as much as sometimes we're prone to. That's all a cultural thing. Someone came up to me on Chasa Monday night, told me that he was learning in the Telzer Yeshiva when Rav Gifter was Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav Gifter was davening with his back to the crowd. He was sitting in the Mizrach fountain, he was sitting in the front, and in middle of davening, he turns around and screams in Yiddish. I can't speak Yiddish, but he screams, "It sounds like a library in here! What's the matter with you?" He was upset that the davening didn't feel alive. It didn't feel like an energetic davening. And we put so much emphasis in our shuls and schools and whatever. Quiet. It needs to be quiet during davening. That's not davening. Quiet? You don't want quiet. I was very against, I don't know who started the campaign. I'm sure they did a lot of wonderful, great things, and they got all sorts of gedolim to talk about it. The whole campaign, stop the talking. I don't think that's the way to get people to daven. Stop the talking, then they'll just be bored. Teach them how to daven. You know, teach them, like, to connect. Yeah, they're just sitting there not talking. You know, how long can a person stare into space for? You know, teach them to actually connect to the tefillah, to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So it's about creating that culture. And when we're able to do that, then we're not only doing ourselves a favor, but we'll be bearing the full extent of the responsibility that we accepted, that we already accepted to bear back at Har Grizim and Har Eval. And when we have that level of responsibility, then we'll indeed be ready for Tichlashana Vikil Vosah. Okay.